Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello, it's Tuesday, the 2nd of August, 2018. Welcome to Africa Link Live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
My name is Zipporah Nyambura. As usual, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to leave us your comment and share this audio. Coming up, Zimbabweans await the presidential vote result as the Electoral Commission urges people to be more patient.
The drafters of the Constitution knew that process must be done very meticulously without any mistakes or errors.
Syrian refugees in neighboring Lebanon are living under constant fear after authorities hinted at the prospect of sending them back to war-torn Syria.
At the beginning of the uprising, my husband was killed because he took part in them. My son was with the regime army doing his compulsory service. The Syrian intelligence service killed him because he deserted.
We have that and a lot more lined up for you today, but before that, we hear what has been happening around the world.
My name is Jen Nyingi with DW News. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has announced that it will start announcing the results of the presidential election at 10 p.m. local time. The main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, has already challenged the reliability of the results, saying the commission is working in favor of the current president, Emmerson Mnangagwa.
Mr. Mnangagwa knows that he has lost this election. If he had won this election would have been announced long back. But they are trying to massage the figures, to try and advance a fictitious and a fallacious result. The results are known by all Zimbabweans. At a constituents level, when people vote, people know the presidential vote first. That is what is counted first, before they count the parliamentary.
Yesterday, three people were killed following a government crackdown on opposition protesters in the capital, Harare. Congolese opposition leader Moise Katumbi has announced that he will be returning to the Democratic Republic of Congo on Friday after 2 years in exile. Katumbi, a former governor of the southern province of Katanga, is planning to submit himself for December's presidential elections.
I'm going back to Congo. I've got a fight, a peaceful fight for our country to have the first peaceful transition. I'm going back. I'm not scared about anything. I didn't do anything wrong.
Both Katumbi and another prominent opposition politician, Jean-Pierre Bemba, could be barred from contesting the election, potentially is in the way for the current president, Joseph Kabila, or his chosen successor. Meanwhile, an international delegation has arrived in the Democratic Republic of Congo following a second Ebola outbreak in less than 3 months. Officials from the United Nations, the World Bank, the World Health Organization, and Congo's Ministry of Health will support a team already on the ground. 26 cases of Ebola, 20 of them fatal, have been reported in the eastern region of Beni. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A senior Turkish official has accused U.S. President Donald Trump of jeopardizing long-standing close ties between Turkey and the United States. This comes after Washington announced sanctions against two Turkish ministers over the country's detention of an American pastor. Ankara has vowed to retaliate against the move, which is aimed at pressurizing Turkey to release Pastor Andrew Branson, who is accused of aiding a failed coup attempt against Turkish President Erdogan in 2016. Here is President Erdogan's senior advisor, Enoch Çevik.
Everyone's very disappointed because nobody expected this kind of treatment to two cabinet ministers. President Trump is taking a very small case and jeopardizing Turkish-American relations and Turkish-American friendship.
And finally, the Roman Catholic Church has formally changed its position on death penalty by changing its teaching. The new provision is likely to run into stiff opposition from conservative Catholics in the United States and other countries where capital punishment is legal and many believers support it. For more news and information, head to our Facebook page, DW Africa, or DW page. My name is Jen Nyingi.
And this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura. And first of all, a warm welcome to you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Ali Omi there giving us a thumbs up. And David Bolel saying hujambo, which actually means hello. Hello back to you.
Wow. Anyway, Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission says it will start announcing results from the presidential election this evening at 10 p.m. local time. The delays have increased speculation that results are being manipulated, a claim the Electoral Commission has vehemently denied. The Commission by law has 5 days from Monday's vote to announce the results.
Many, as we know, are waiting with bated breath to know the winner between the two main candidates, President Emmerson Mnangagwa and opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. However, the parliamentary results gave a huge win to the ruling party, ZANU-PF, which won 2/3 of the seats. Our correspondent in Harare, Columbus, Mavunga, has been following the happenings there and tells us why there was a delay.
You might call it a delay, but the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission thinks otherwise and says what is happening is good for the nation and is still within its mandate, legal boundaries to hold the results within 5 days after the close of polling. Take a listen to what Kubani Moyo, the spokesperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, had to say when that question was posed to him by journalists this morning.
The drafters of the Constitution knew the process that is required in terms of having to physic the necessary V11 forms from polling stations to the command center so that they can be verified by the chief election agents of the parties as well as our secretariat. That process must be done very meticulously without any mistakes or errors, because if that happens, we can have more dire consequences if out results that are not properly constructed.
The spokesperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
The Electoral Commission also claims that their websites were hacked. Has this affected the tallying so far, or what have they said about it?
No, they haven't said anything, and it's not affecting anything because their tallying is not done online. It's physical, it's manual. The hacking of the website, the Electoral Commission has not been willing to comment on it, but I would say it has nothing to do with the results tallying, because the tallying of our results here in Zimbabwe is done manually. A paper is sent from one polling station to another until it gets to the head office here in Harare.
Chamisa has claimed the election is rigged, and he has urged his supporters to get ready for the celebration. How is the commission reacting to these claims of vote rigging?
They have said that it has said we didn't rig, and the election, whoever won through the ballot, is going to be declared the winner.
I was talking there to Columbus Mavunga in Harare. And of course, many of you have been telling us a lot, but we will get that.
Now, international observers have also urged the Electoral Commission to release results as soon as possible to avoid further violence after 3 people were killed on Wednesday in clashes between security forces and opposition supporters. And as you've heard in that Q&A or question and answer with our correspondent Columbus Mavunga and my colleague Zipporah Nyambura, Chamisa declared himself as the leader. We can see your comments coming in. But first, I spoke to Privilege Mushaniri on the situation in the streets of Harare.
Currently, the streets are empty, and business is unusually slow than it is on a normal day. This is because of the presence of the police and the army in the streets. The army, which was deployed yesterday, is actually going to stay in the streets until and unless the police indicates that they are no longer needed. They were deployed yesterday after the request of the commissioner, police commissioner general, who says that his force is understaffed because of the deployment of the elections.
Now, is there any kind of official statement that the government has made after those clashes that we saw that were really, really not easy ones, to say the least, between opposition supporters of the MDC and the security forces in the streets of Harare?
The Minister of Home Affairs, Obed Mpofu, addressed a news conference, and he apportioned blame on the MDC, the opposition party, and says that they are solely responsible for the violent clashes that happened yesterday. This is what he had to say at the news conference.
Opposition parties have never enjoyed freedom of meeting their supporters since independence, the way they've been doing. So they've perhaps interpreted our understanding to being weak. I think they're testing our resolve, and I think they are making a big, big mistake. And when we start clamping on them, they will also cry foul.
That was the Zimbabwe's Minister of Home Affairs. Now, Privilege, from the onset, it seemed like, you know, the rest was between two giants, the ruling ZANU-PF party and the main opposition party, that is the Movement for Democratic Change. But of course, there were other, you know, stakeholders in this election, like other opposition parties. What have they been saying?
Several of them, they've roundly condemned the violence that happened in Harare, saying that even the constitution guarantees the right to demonstrate. Earlier on, I spoke to one of the presidential aspirants, Evaristo, who told me that what the military did is uncalled for.
I'm very distressed about how the state responded. I think protesters have a right to express their dissatisfaction, to see soldiers opening live fire and killing people, unarmed civilians. That's a crime against humanity.
Evaristo Chikwanga, another presidential aspirant, ending that chat with Privilege. Now, we understand Zipporah, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has been in touch with the main opposition leader in an attempt to ease the tensions a day after the opposition accused him, and even today, of inciting the violence. Now, we have some comments, live comments on Facebook.
Yeah, Isaac, of course, people are reacting to this topic very well, and of course, many are touched because it's happening in other African countries. For example, Peter Maxek says, Mugabe too is back. The show is going on, and he says these are poor African politics.
One of our usual contributors from the Gambia, that is Lamini Fadera, says this initiative is a good move by the president. Inciting unrest can't resolve any of their problems, and the Electoral Commission should also speed up announcing the results to avoid further tensions. Well, just to let you know, Lamini Fadera from the Gambia, the commission says it will announce the results this evening at 10 p.m. local time. Now, we move on to Syria. We'll go back again to Africa whenever time allows. With the war in Syria apparently, you know, winding down, according to some analysts, refugees living in neighboring countries like Jordan and Lebanon are facing mounting pressure to return home. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says his army is close to victory in the country's civil war. His regime now holds around two-thirds of the Syrian territory.
The conflict in Syria has been going on for 7 years and forced thousands to flee and seek asylum in European countries like Germany. This report by Tabea Gopelt is now presented by Sela Oneko.
Lebanon is currently hosting roughly 1.5 million Syrian refugees, the highest number in proportion to its population in the world. Now it wants to send them back to Syria, since the government there claims to have reclaimed much of the territory formerly under the control of rebel groups. But many refugees are worried for their safety in a country that has been ravaged by conflict. Huda al-Khatib, a mother of eight, is one of the Syrian refugees living in Lebanon who was forced to flee her home. She is afraid to return because of her family's role in the conflict.
At the beginning of the uprising, protests were not violent, they were peaceful. But my husband was killed because he took part in them. My son was with the regime army doing his compulsory service. The Syrian intelligence service killed him because he deserted.
Huda fears the government is going to arrest those who protested against the regime, but the pressure from Lebanon to leave is building up. Some 3,000 Syrians have already registered to return. Ghossen Diab, a member of the Syrian committee, is tasked with collecting the names of willing refugees and sending the list to Damascus for approval. Diab claims Syria is now safe, but a lot of the refugees still feel differently. Many say they may be forced to look at the possibility of fleeing to Europe as an option.
It's not a condition, not an issue of approval. It's just about informing the government of the names of the people returning.
That report was compiled by Tabea Gopelt. Now back to our main story of Zimbabwe. Many of you are still commenting, Zipporah. Timothy Mbaya Migori says, why can't we just have one peaceful election in this beloved continent of ours?
Francis Tata actually is thanking DW. Thank you for monitoring and keeping us informed of the current situation in Zimbabwe. We are doing everything to keep you updated. We have correspondents on the ground and we'll keep you updated.
And of course, Charles Ongole says, someone who wants truly peace does not start by accusing the other party for incitement. Keep the debate flowing as usual. The sport is, or the venue is, DW Africa. And just in case you've just tuned in, you are listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura. And of course, thank you again. I will mention all our Facebook listeners there. We are getting all your comments from Talaba and Nasir Mohammed. You can continue talking and giving us your feedback. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, rape victims in Liberia tell DW their chilling experience and how they were shunned at the time they needed support.
My auntie went all the time.
I was living with my auntie. One day when I was sleeping, I felt someone taking off my underwear. Then he raped me. I finally told her that her brother had raped me.
That was really unfortunate, Zipporah. Some of the rape victims that didn't match support, like therapy and, you know, the help at time of need, they don't get it. And actually, they are sent back to the village, just like this lady you had in this report that will come later in Speaking Out.
Yeah, very traumatizing. You, our listeners, can stay tuned for that. But first, let's go to South Sudan, where aid organizations have been forced to carry out airdrops of food aid across South Sudan as the rainy season makes about 70% of the country inaccessible.
Now, for instance, Save the Children says due to impassable roads, its budget has been greatly affected since it has to rely or depend now on air transport to deliver much needed aid and support to vulnerable people, especially women and children. Before we came on air, I spoke to Ashat Malik. He's the new Deputy Country Director for Program Implementation Save the Children in South Sudan. And he started by telling me about the plight, especially for children and women there.
It is a protracted conflict in South Sudan, which has very negative impact on children and women and the general population overall. 63% of the total population in South Sudan at the moment is facing severe food insecurity. Linked to that, we have protection issues. There are like huge number of children who are recruited as armed soldiers, both by all the parties. Like, I don't want to go into details. The situation is so bad that 31 counties from 17 counties will be entering into a pre-famine stage. That's the state of affairs in terms of food security in the country. It's very, very hard. It's one of the like worst countries to be a child.
Yes, you just mentioned that South Sudan is one of the worst places to be a child. Now, how accessible are some of the areas where these children need much of your help and support?
95% of our delivery of aid is highly dependent on air transport, which basically has a very negative impact on our operations cost. Last year, we spent significant amount of money. Around 10% of the total funding was spent on air transport. There are no roads in South Sudan. Access problems are more related with the infrastructure, poor infrastructure. And of course, in areas where conflict is happening, we have also those challenges.
Mr. Malik, if I may recall very well, last year, President Salva Kiir said that or pledged that his government will support in all possible ways all aid organizations, including your own, in reaching vulnerable people.
Yes, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, did it materialize then?
You see, again, it is a bit subjective. The capacity of the government at the moment and the infrastructure has kind of like impact and the joblessness and the economic situation. There are multiple compound economic problems which the country is facing, which has an impact on the security situation in the country. Jobless youth, food insecurity, conflict, all that has an impact on. So going back to you, what you said is whether the promise made by the president has materialized. I'll say there was a sincere effort, but economic problems linked with what I'll say the insecurity in country generally has still an impact on access.
That was Ashad Malik, Deputy Country Director for Program Implementation Save the Children, South Sudan.
Uzon. We now head to Zambia, where controversial hip-hop recording musician turned activist Fumba Chama, commonly known as Pilato, has dropped another hit cover production depicting Zambia's socio-political state of affairs and plummeting democracy barely 2 months after returning from exile.
And his song, This Is Zambia, is a remake of This Is America, which was originally done by Childish Gambino, an American artist. It has taken social media by the storm, especially in Zambia and the capital, Lusaka, where our correspondent, Kathy Scombi, spoke to the man himself behind This Is Zambia, Pilato, on his latest project. Let's listen in.
I wrote this song just as in response to what was happening around. Like you may be aware, there is This Is America, which obviously sparked discussion on the gun culture in America and everything. And I felt Zambia had their own story to tell. So that song was me sharing the Zambian story, just like Gambino Childish had done.
Why do you do this kind of music as an artist, you know, instead of just looking at other issues like love and, you know, matters of the heart? Why do you deal with social, economic and political issues in your songs?
It's my contribution to the development of my people and my country. I provide a platform for myself and for so many people that have not had the voice to speak out. So my music, my life is that platform where people can actually air their views and challenge their fears. So I do this kind of music as a contribution to the development of our people and our country.
And is there something new that you are working on? What are you doing right now? What are you working on, you know, for the future?
I have an album that's coming up. I'm hopeful that people connect and support it. I have an album coming up called Man to Man, which is an album that has got a lot of beautiful songs.
That is Kathy Short talking to Pilato, a Zambian hip-hop musician there. And of course, we know This Is America has been a hit. We have This Is Rwanda. I'm curious.
Unfortunately not, but I hope Pilato will, you know, succeed with his version of This Is Zambia. And I'm sure, since it's taken, you know, social media platforms by storm in Lusaka, the fans of hip-hop music are really enjoying it. Anyway, away from music, we'll be back with much more by this time, you know, not so much, you know, musical and entertaining.
Yeah.
Speaking out.
To Liberia now, where child rape is the second most commonly reported crime in the country, according to the UN Women Country Representative.
The harsh rape law that was enacted and the presence of the criminal court have not deterred offenders. DW's Evelyn Pade in Monrovia has more.
Sixteen-year-old Klubo sits lonely under a tree as she watches her friends play. She was robbed of her childhood at an early age of 12. She was raped by her uncle.
My auntie went all the time.
I was living with my auntie since my parents sent me to her for schooling. One day when I was sleeping, I felt someone taking off my underwear. He covered my mouth and warned me that he would kill me if I told anyone. Then he raped me. Blood was all over me. When day broke, I took a bath and never told anyone.
That morning, I woke up, I take bath.
Kluber got sick after that traumatizing ordeal. But not even her auntie would believe her story.
Finally, I tell her that her brother raped me.
I finally told her that her brother had raped me, and she said I was lying. She said I was putting her brother in trouble over the rape claims. That's how she sent me back to my parents in the rural area.
Send me back to my parents in the interior.
Klubo is one of the children who are raped daily in Liberia. The minister in charge of children affairs said all of the rape cases reported, 97% of them are targeted at children. Klubo's uncle has not been prosecuted since family members decided to cover it up. The Ministry of Justice said it is becoming more difficult to catch such perpetrators due to lack of cooperation from witnesses or family members. John Gable is the director of the Ministry's Sexual and Gender-Based Violence Crimes Unit.
There is increment in the number of cases reported on a daily basis because many persons have got to know that you don't need to pay a lawyer to go to represent you. There are free lawyers to do that. The challenges are the refusal and failure of witnesses to court after they have placed the perpetrator behind bars. Somebody accept money and they choose to compromise the case. It builds a kind of culture of impunity that causes people to engage in mob justice.
Members of the Liberian Senate last year amended the rape law, awaiting concurrence from the House of Representatives, which would allow rape perpetrators to be released unborn. However, Human rights lawyer Tiawon Gunglo says that amendment was a big mistake.
Sex is for adults and there's no way to change it. I don't agree with them. I don't think anybody should support that amendment. That amendment is not a progressive amendment. It is retrogressive, and I think it's trying to make our society a decadent society. I'm a father, and I'm soon to probably be a grandfather soon. My daughter is pregnant. I want protection for the children of this country. What they are promoting is savagery, you know? So I don't agree with them, and I appeal to the lower house not to accept that amendment.
Rape is a first-degree felony, punishable to 10 years and even life imprisonment. But that has not deterred sexual child predators. Advocacy groups are now calling for harsher punishment, including castrating and locking such men in prison up to trial.
Evening Papade reporting from Monrovia. I mean, Zipporah, you heard that activists are recommending some methods like castrating rapists.
Yeah,
and
in fact, yeah, I think they
are in support, yeah, right?
I think they are really desperate to get that issue done. And I think it's about time anyway. Children are suffering.
It's about time that men got, you know, castrated, you know, to stop their raping. Is that what you mean?
No, just to I get mean it a clear stand action. Me. No, I've just say stand action should be taken now. It's about time.
Okay, that is Zipporah's opinion, not DW or Africa Link's opinion about the matter. Anyway, let's go back to our main story. Zimbabweans are anxiously waiting for results from Monday's vote, an election that the opposition alleges that has been rigged by ZANU-PF because of the delays in delivering the results. Now, on our Facebook page, we asked, why are elections in Africa generally about rigging and violence? Can Africa aim to organize, at least sooner than later, a free and fair election? Zippy.
Yeah, some people actually think it's not the whole of Africa. For example, Nathaniel Kwaker, who said, you should visit Ghana next time. We hold elections and you will know that, yes, Africa can and has been organizing free and fair elections with no violence.
Well, that is Nathaniel. And Kabo says African politics is always the same, even though we are talking about democracy. But I'm not seeing it playing, and only the poor who got out and cast their votes face the suffering at the end.
A lot of mixed reactions. Shola Marin says elections are not generally about rigging and violence everywhere in Africa. And he gives an example in Benin Republic where elections are free and fair, he says, but in other countries it's because our authorities don't like their people. They like natural resources of their countries.
Now, Emmanuel Yerisebe also added voice to many of you, what you have been saying, you know, on the matter. He says electorates don't trust the independence of the organizing, you know, bodies. That is a mind. I think here he means the electoral commissions, because most of them actually are handpicked by the incumbent president, you know,
unfortunately.
Anyway, Zippy, away from elections, let's go to Nigeria, isn't it?
Of course, we know Buhari will be beginning a 10-day vacation in London from Friday, his office has said. And many people are talking about it. Ngoaju says, he says African dictators keep amazing me. How many Western leaders come to Africa for vacation?
What is amazing is that at a time when there's a lot of the political crisis, defections from the ruling coalition, the APC, people going back to the original parties, he chooses to go for a vacation.
Maybe it's actually better to take a break.
And something that has struck me is that they didn't disclose whether he will see his doctor there. And of course, when they didn't disclose the venue. Lucas Pusame says, Buhari should just do the honorable thing and resign. He is tired and weak. He needs to take care of his health. And sarcastically says, I wish him well.
Okay. And Olainka Walex says, I told my Facebook friends in a comment a few weeks ago that Buhari is unwell and will soon take impromptu holiday. The money that has been spent on him is enough to build standard hospital in every town across Nigeria or refurbish the existing ones. So lots of reactions.
Exactly.
On that note,
Pieria said, what a shame. Giant of Africans can't build well-equipped hospitals for their own country, the fact that even Nigeria is Africa's largest economy. Anyway, keep the debate flowing. And of course, a big story of the day is that Zimbabweans are waiting for results from Monday's election. It is a story that we'll bring to you whenever we can in our next edition. And on behalf of the production crew, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.